And I hope I have this potted up loud enough. And there it is. So we'll have some fun with this. It is 9 a.m. You're listening to WNST, Towson, Baltimore. And I've had a long run with this band. Back on February 5th, 1980, I attended my first real rock and roll concert. I was 11. I told my mom I wanted to see the Styx band, but I always thought it should be spelled S-T-I-C-K-S because that's the way Styx was spelled when I was 11. And then I had to discover the river and the mysticism and the crystal ball and the pieces of eight. But it was Cornerstone that was the cornerstone in 1980. And 33 years later, Styx is playing at Pier 6 tonight. I'd love to tell you tickets are readily available, but they're not. It's kind of like really sold out, and I'm sure there'll be lots of boats in the harbor, or boats on the river in this case. And I think I've done enough Styx ranting here to at least make JY laugh. I was introduced to JY through Chips Enough of Enough's Enough, and I'll give JY my my best Chips Enough impersonation as I bring him on, too. That's him singing. He's not Miss America. He might be Mr. America. Hey, JY, how's it going there, brother? What's going on?
Little brother, what's going on?
How are you, man?
I'm great. I'm absolutely great.
You know what? And I'm going to be really, really honest. I wasn't going to call your band manager. I wasn't going to call Terry, who does your PR. I was just going to let this thing go. I live about three blocks from the pier. I wasn't going to hit you up for tickets. I wasn't going to bang you to get on the show. And then I realized I was filling in this morning, and you were in town today. And Terry hit me, and I'm like, because I like leaving you guys alone. I literally love you guys. You were my first love, my first band. And I've taken so many pictures. I've seen you in 50 states. I've bugged you for tickets. You don't need to put up with me anymore, you know, and here you are and getting out of bed and doing this. Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. I'm absolutely great.
On the road again. Wait. I mean, you guys going to tour till 90? I mean, did you really think back in 1980 when you were playing the Baltimore Civic Center that you would still be doing this 30? It wasn't there. There was a thought that this had to end when you were 40, when you were 25, right?
Well, I mean, who was saying in my generation, hope I die before I get old? And I think that, you know, we'd seen all the, you know, the apart from Elvis, you know, most of those bands and the Beatles, Dave Clark Five, kind of, you know, they all fell by the wayside when the psychedelic era came in, and then that all fell by the wayside, and the classic rock fell by the wayside, really, in 1990 when grunge came in, and 1994, I thought this was, you know, that it was all over for us, and then next thing you know, in 1995, we get the band back together and find a manager who says, you know, just make this an event and put tickets on sale, and they will come. And indeed, they did come, in 15, 20,000 people a night in 1996 for our reunion tour. We did a DVD of it, and we've been, you know, going out on the road every year since then. And it's virtually impossible to get new music played, but the demand for us as a live act just continues to grow. So it's crazy good. Not the same as it used to be, but nothing is. And unlike some of my NFL playing buddies who, you know, that, you know, get to be, I mean, how Ray Lewis was 36, was he? 37 when he finally called it quits. I mean, that's a long run for a football player. But for me, in my early 60s, it's pretty crazy good.
You know, I put a bunch of crazy pictures up on Facebook and Twitter over the last, you know, 15 hours since I realized you were coming on the show, and I actually had to get out of bed this morning and do morning radio for Drew, who's golfing today. Good luck, Drew, with your tournament. And you know, the minute I put stuff up, I know you get this, and you may want to, you know, I ask questions to athletes who blow off questions all the time. The first thing is, you know, where's Dennis? Which Dennis from the band? And I saw Behind the Music, and it's been 20 years now, and I guess you'll just get that forever. And I don't know what the stock answer is, but I always think to myself, I started this radio station 15 years ago, and I've had to part ways with guys, and I still get emails about that, and I still get that on my Facebook page, and people don't understand. I think it's amazing. Like, when I go see Rush, that those three three guys still love each other and get along the way they do? Because I don't have the same friends I had in high school. I don't have the same friends I had when I was in my 20s. You know, and keeping businesses together and bands together and people together, I can't think of anything harder than being in that marriage. And then I go watch the Eagles DVD and see everything that they've been through over 40 years and still making great music. It really is. I mean, it's a tough spotlight to be in, and it's a tough business, I would think. As you said, you thought you had it five times, it wasn't going to happen, and you're here. You know, how do you deflect that, or how do you even answer that? And I think, you know, Lawrence Gallant does such a great job in the band that I don't want to say I forgot about Dennis, but I saw Dennis last year and I see you this year, and it's all good. And as long as everybody's happy and playing the music and having a good time tonight, isn't that what it's really about?
You know, I look, McCartney goes out and does his own thing, and Lennon and Harrison are not around, and Ringo's out with his own band at age 72. He's in the best shape of his life. He's having a great old time out there, and he puts together great, you know, sort of all-star bands that surround him, and they're both happy. They're both not dealing with the drama of the band interactions. And you talked about marriage. How many two-way marriages end in divorce?
50%.
So to keep a five-way marriage together, I mean, the odds are far more difficult. And when I was a Mormon, no, just kidding. You know, it's Dennis DeYoung, an incredibly talented guy. We did some great work together. He and I were always, we shared a love of sports, and we shared a love of wanting to be successful. But our musical tastes were, there was a middle ground where they sort of coincided to a point, but I think Dennis really sort of reworked himself to sort of resonate more with me, because I was more cutting-edge guy when I joined up with these guys, and then he became more and more his mainstream self, and then pretty soon his, you know, musical theater side came out, and, you know, he's doing what he wants to do, and he really doesn't want to do what we're doing to the extent we're doing it. So we're doing 110 shows a year, and he's out there on his own doing maybe 30, 40 shows a year. And, I mean, if we were together, he might only be able to survive 70. So we're doing twice as many shows with two Styx entities out there on the road. And we all still share in the record royalties, and we continue to sell the catalog stuff. And so, I mean, he's happy, I presume. I'm sure he'd like to be back with us for a few bit, but we just got such a great thing going here, and we have... there's a brand new chemistry, and it's been almost 15 years. And I love my bandmates, and Dennis hated being on the road, and we love being on the road. So it's a matter of this is where we're at now, and I truly wish him well, but I don't see any reunion in the future. I don't see McCartney and Ringo getting back together. I don't see Dennis and Styx getting back together.
You know, what's funny is I went out to see, you know, Mick and Keith, and I paid my $400, and went out to see the Stones, you know, a couple, 3 months ago. And, you know, they're even bringing guys back from 30 years ago to play songs.
Yeah.
Now. So, you know, I think from a fan's perspective, you want people to get along. And then there's the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame where, you know, David Lee Roth got back together with, you know. But I just really do find it amazing. Don't you have some appreciation for that relationship that you still have with the guys in the band, that it's amazing? Because when I go see Rush, to think that those three guys have never broken it up, you two now, you know, 35 years, still the same guys, that is so unique. It's so hard to do.
And Aerosmith,
right. Well, they put different guys in the band. Crespo and Dufay were in the band for 5 years, and they had their moments of, you know, the Toxic Twins and all that stuff. But it's so hard, and I think that there's an appreciation for relationships that the fans don't really understand. I guess they can't, because everybody wants it the way it used to be.
Well, it's not their job or their duty to try and understand the dynamics of what it is to be in an artistic partnership. Because there was conflict, I think we wrote some great music collectively back, and you know, and recorded and produced some great records back in the 70s and early 80s. And it was because of the inner conflicts, or the conflicts between us, in a way, that I think the music was forced even to a higher level than it might be otherwise. And but those were agonizing years in terms of trying to coexist.
You know, you talk about those years in the 70s and stuff, and I guess Springsteen would be another guy I could bring in, because when I went to see Springsteen three, 4 years ago, he went into that wave that you guys kind of started in some ways, doing the whole album. You know, he was doing Born to Run one night, and Wild and Innocent one night, and Born to USA one night. You guys went and did the Grand Illusion at Peace 8. I saw you at the theater down at the Hippodrome a couple years ago. Loved it. I've seen the DVD of it and all that stuff. But that whole nostalgia for doing those songs, watching you do those songs that I haven't literally listened to since spinning literally the phonograph, you know, watch it, drop the needle and pray, as Bruce Springsteen would sing. To learn those songs again must have been kind of fun for you.
It was fun on some levels. It was a heck of a lot of work on another level. But in hindsight, I mean, it was a great exercise for us to put ourselves through, and it actually made me a better guitar player, and it made this a better band, and we dusted off some what turned out to be gems that music's written 30 years ago, but seems perfectly timely today, and maybe even more so than it was then. So it's been, it was a great thing to kind of freshen the live act up and just put a different spin on it. And there's a great DVD, which finally has been aired on Palladium VH1 Classic here, and starting 3-4 months ago, so...
I would love to talk to you about these catalogs and putting it together, because I've been to, over 1,000 concerts. I mean, you remember me from back in the Music Critic days and in the 80s and all that stuff. And, I mean, God, I think I've seen you guys 40 or 50 times alone, let alone all the other bands that I love that I've seen so many times. But, as a fan, you pay the money, you come to the show, you want to hear the hits. As an artist, and I think... artist, and I've learned this, when you were in your 40s and maybe early 50s, there was some, not just you, but bands in general, always wanted to get the new music out because they were still writing music that they felt was relevant. The fans are like, play Come Sail Away, give me Crystal Ball, give me the old stuff. And then I think now, maybe over the last 10 years, when I go to see Sting, it's a greatest hit show. When I go to see the Stones, it's a greatest hit show, because you're paying top dollar, you're out there, everybody's waited weeks, months, years, driven, taking the night off, got the sitters or the grand sitters in some cases. Some cases they're bringing the kids now. How compelled do you feel to have to play a greatest hits show at this point? And how many people tonight will be seeing you for the first time? Probably not that many, but I love hearing the obscure stuff. But some fans just, don't bore us, get to the chorus, right?
Well, there's we start the show with some very well-known music, and then we dig much deeper in the middle of the show, and then we ended up, with five, home run songs, and so we still like to dig deep, and if there was new music, it would find its way in there, and eventually there's going to be, but it, as you say, people want to come out and hear the soundtrack to their glorious misspent youth, and there's a lot of Styx music we don't perform that some people might want to hear, like Babe and Mr. Roboto, particularly, we don't play. The softer side and the quirky side kind of stay away. This is a hard rocking, side of the band that's going to be on stage with myself and Tommy Shaw tonight, along with the rest of them. And people want to hear Renegade and Come Sail Away. Too much time on my hands.
People here do not want to hear Renegade. Let's stop right. Hey, let's go into the sports right now.
I guess maybe in certain small pockets, Renegade doesn't want to be heard. But
this is a pocket right here.
Got another ring last year. I think that people could leave before we play the last song.
Okay, so let's get to this, because the three things that I've been getting on my Facebook page when I put up these moldy oldie pictures of you and I back when we were younger men, is where's Dennis? Love the band, pick a song. I love a song, whatever. And it's those bastards played Red. They're Steeler fans. And I'm like, no, they're actually Bears fans. And I don't even know how the hell that happened. But I'll tell you this, JY, and this is God's honor. I'm in that Ravens locker room all the time. And we've beaten Pittsburgh up there a couple of times. These 22-year-old African-American football players that listen to hip-hop and Jay-Z and, T-Pain, whatever they're listening to, they don't know who you are. They don't know that song, but they know it now. And honestly, to the Ravens players that have been around, Terrell Suggs loves that song now because it fires him up. You know what I mean? Like, I've had several Ravens guys say to me, we love hearing that up. He said, as much as the towels come out and they think it fires them up, if you've been a Raven for 5, 6, 7, 8 years and you've walked off the field having lost playoff games up there, the Ravens players love that song now. The fans here hate it. but the Ravens players have met their oppressor. But how did that thing happen up there? Because I don't think you guys had anything to do with it.
No, honestly, our manager Charlie, who you've met, called me up one day and said, there's a playoff game, and I don't know, this was back 10 years ago, and said, the mother bleeping Steelers, they just played Renegade on the television broadcast. We heard it there in Heinz Field, and we were shocked because no one warned us in advance that they were doing this. But, I mean, I like to think there was a buddy of mine who was a program director in Buffalo at Rock Station. He moved down to Pittsburgh, and he was kind of at his peak. John McGann was his name, and he was at his peak.
So a Bills fan is at the heart of this Steeler thing? Don't tell me that.
Well, I don't know if he was a Sticks fan, and the fact that he was born in Victor, New York, I suppose made him a Bills fan.
Then it can't be that bad. If he was a Sticks fan, he's all right.
He played Sticks music to death in 1978. We sold out two shows there back then, I think because we had a friend in the program director spot, and he just talked us up. And Renegade, who, when I first heard it, said, that guitar solo's too long. But then it wound up, there was like a Battle of the Bands thing that rock radio stations did back then, and Renegade defeated everything for almost a month on that station. That just became a huge song there, and then it kind of faded away, and then 30 years later, some guy at, Heinz Field decides to just put it up there, and then they got people fired up, and then the Steelers came back to win a game, and they've been using it ever since. And I know Charlie, our manager, is from Pittsburgh originally, and he's friends with ownership over there, and they said there was a movement afoot to try and change that song about 5 years ago, and they said, no, we can't change that song, so...
We have that in Baltimore where, thank God, I'm a country boy for Oriole games. It started in 1979, and 34 years later, thank God I'm a country boy's played every single night in the seventh inning. And when they tried to take it away, because Angelos hated it like he hates everything that the Oriole fans wanted, the fans demanded it to come back, and it came back. And John Denver's been dead 15 years. They're still playing it, and I think that'll be played forever. I think you're good for life. I think the Steelers will play that song forever.
Well, it's part of the fan experience, and... what are you going to do? We had nothing. I mean, we helped make the song popular with by creating that record, and by having a dear friend, the program director, is my judgment how it became. So everybody in Pittsburgh knew the song. So when somebody put it up there, everyone recognized it and kind of responded to it. But it was definitely somebody that worked, at Heinz Field for the Steelers and decided to try it one night, and it just worked like gangbusters, and they came back to win. So. It's been, just kind of took on a life of its own at that moment, and it's just only grown from there.
JY, I mean, we're friends and stuff. Do you have to really just go there and put a jersey on and sing? And I mean, do you have to go that far? Do they have to invite you in, and do you have to, be a special guest to the Steelers when you're there? I mean,
hey, we played the first time the Ravens won the Super Bowl, when Brandon Stokely got behind Jason Sehorn and Dilfer threw the pass.
Hold on a minute. You're getting me excited. Stop now. I just posted a picture up of that, and it's funny you would say that because of all these crazy things I've been through with you guys and how incredibly kind you've been to me, and I'll go into that in a minute, but I'll go into that right now and just say, I camped out for concert tickets for you guys on the Kilroy Tour. I begged my parents to get me tickets. I begged my stepbrother to drive me down to the Capitol Center on the Paradise Theater tour when I was 13 to go to the shows and all that stuff. You guys have just been awesome people and great people to know, and it's really neat when, you sort of idolize people and you get to know them and they turn out to be great people as well. So that's my compliment for you. But that particular night before the Super Bowl, I came down the elevator and I walked into the elevator at the Tampa Hyatt, and Tommy Shaw's in the elevator. And I looked at him and I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, my team's going to win the Super Bowl tomorrow. He's like, yeah, I know, we're playing. And we took a picture, and I just put it up on Facebook a little while ago. And it's so random that I would just bump into Tommy Shaw the night before the Ravens won the Super Bowl, and you guys were part of that. That was a thrill for you. I remember you guys thinking, when you get invited to do a Super Bowl, now, you know, they're bringing in, you know, Beyonce and whoever else, but I mean, I love me some Tom Petty and some Who and some Bruce, and at the, you know, I guess Bon Jovi will do it at some point, but for you to get invited to the Super Bowl, that's about as big as it gets, right?
No, it was phenomenal for me, and the huge NFL fan that I am, to actually be down there and, you know, be on the field at the Super Bowl and be in the hotel, just running into, you know, NFL Hall of Famer after NFL Hall of Famer as you're walking through the halls and the lobby of the hotel, and to go to Radio Row where, I mean, you in San Diego 2 years later, you sent me down with Don King. I mean, that's something.
I haven't put that picture up yet. I'm going to put that one up. Mr. America and Miss America together. Is that great? Perfect, man. Well, it's been crazy. You know, I haven't seen you in 8 years because I haven't bugged you guys because I'm trying to not bug you guys because I feel like, you know, I don't want to be that guy. But the last time I saw you, I was randomly in Chicago for a Ravens game. I took the press box elevator up to steal food. I had all my gear on because I was going to go sit in the rain. And the five of you were sitting in the press box in Chicago. And I'm like, what the hell are you doing here? And you're like, we're singing the national anthem. And I'm like, hey, I mean, it's random how this sticks thing has worked for me through a lifetime. But you're a Bears fan, right? Give me a little Bears preview.
I have no idea if we have an offensive line or not. And if we don't have an offensive line, we don't have a team.
True. That's it? That's all you're going to say? Jay Cutler, are you pro-Cutler or anti-Cutler?
I think he's overrated. I think he's a twerp on television. I think he's, you know, the dumb little injuries he subjected himself to after, I mean, the one, you know, where he hurt himself trying to tackle a guy after an interception, which turned into a pick six, it was like, you idiot. You idiot.
Spoken like a true fan, JY.
You know, I mean, and he does not seem, I've never met the guy, and it may just be that he's, you know, on camera, he gets a little weird. Some people don't know what to say on camera.
He's also diabetic, and my wife's diabetic, so I have so much respect for a guy, you know, shooting up on the sidelines, needles testing, and all that stuff. And so, I mean,
always. So maybe he's got a blood sugar problem, and I didn't know that.
Oh,
so.
Wow, okay. Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's been used for his emotional outbursts, you know, and being married to a diabetic, I know a little bit about that, and anybody who has a diabetic in their life, but that's been something that has been talked about in that way, but I do agree with you. I watch him on TV and think, you know, that's not what leaders do. That's not what, I feel the same way about Phillip Rivers, and it's funny here, for years, JY, Flacco just took nothing but flack about not being that guy, not being the screamer, not being the pointer, not being the emotional slam the helmet. You know, after throwing a pick, he would go to the sidelines and be not emotional about it. And all he did was take grief about not being that guy. So I think from a fan's perspective, no matter what they do, if they perform, we love them. And if they don't, we're looking for whatever reaction, and we're going to criticize the reaction.
I mean, he should be called Mr. Playoffs, because if anyone would have thought the Ravens would have done in the playoffs what they did after the Giants came in here and handed the Ravens their hat at home somewhere in November last year.
It was the Broncos, but it was Broncos, yeah.
Well, the Giants did too, at some point late in the season. And I go, I just thought, you know, I didn't think the Ravens had a prayer. And he just didn't throw a pick. Steady as she goes, boom, boom, boom. Defense with Ray back, you know, all of a sudden, you know, elevated just their emotional game, in which, you know, they had their mojo working through the whole thing. You know, Jeremy running that the kickoff back, that was the dagger that killed him. And as much as it seemed like that power outage was going to hurt him in the Super, I mean, they just, they did, you know, I mean, I go back to 2001 when they shut out the Cowboys at home. You know, that reminded me of the 85 Bears who shut out the Cowboys in Dallas 44-0 with a backup quarterback. I said, you can shut out the Cowboys, you can win the Super Bowl. And as I was on them right after that, I said, the Ravens are going to win the Super Bowl.
JY, whatever you do tonight when you take the stage, say something nice about the Ravens before you play Renegade. Just find a minute, to just, you know what I mean? Like, make sure everybody's at peace tonight and we can have a wonderful ending to what I'm sure is going to be a great night. REO Speedwagon out on the road with you, your boy Kevin Cronin, who always loved my cousin. You know, every time he sees me, he talks 59 Go-Go Socks with me all the time. How are the guys in REO doing? All right? Everything good there?
Ario's great. Ario's great. We've done a number of shows with him, set an attendance record at the Iowa State Fair just a couple weeks ago, so we're doing good.
Do you guys do things together where you do a song or two, or it's just two separate sets these days?
There was one tour where we did get together and get out and do that, but typically they do their set, we do ours, and we go our separate ways.
Who comes first? Who comes second tonight?
Tonight it's Ario. We'll play first, and we close the show.
Perfect. Man, I love you. I miss you. It'll be great to see you and catch up with you. You're in the home of the world champions here today, James Young. Make sure you tell Tommy and Lawrence, all the other guys, we'll see him tonight. Thanks for getting out of bed early this morning and spending a couple minutes with. Hey, it's been a few years since I want you to tip your cap for the White Sox, even though they stink right now awfully. I know what a White Sox fan you were. That must have been fun. And obviously in Chicago with the way the hockey teams played and all that stuff, there's been some.
I mean, the Hawks have really lit it up the last few years, and that's been a great thing.
There is hope, isn't there, after having a crappy owner for a couple of decades, that you can, you know, the kid took over. And I mean, that's a hell of a story for Chicago, for Blackhawks fans, what happened there, because the exact same story would happen to our baseball team being taken over by a creep who owns the team, who destroys everything. And the Orioles are better now, it's all good, but the Blackhawks to me were always that inspirational thing that, you know, even the teams at the bottom, because of who owns the team, that thing got fixed there. I mean, that guy was the most hated guy in Chicago, for sure, right, Wirtz?
Yeah, ownership does play a huge role, and the mindset of ownership plays a huge role. It can't fix everything, but it can certainly create a fertile soil for a team to grow big in, you know?
And it must have been great for you to be a White Sox fan and actually get a chance to celebrate, right? I mean, you
were
long suffering. So, hey, man, have a great show tonight. Can't wait to see you guys.
All right.
Hey, add Lorelei into the set for me tonight if you can, all right? Thanks, J-Rod.
We may have another surprise for you instead.
Really? Okay, I like surprises. Right. Just say world champions a lot tonight, and we'll forget about the whole Renegade thing, I promise. Thanks, J-Y.
Take care.
Appreciate you. There he goes. JY from Styx, longtime friend and a really cool.